The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Time now for the Church of the Week, showcasing churches and pulpit ministries from across the greater San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, today we have a special guest. He is a California native that's worked in a variety of ministries, predominantly in Northern California. He is currently serving as the lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church in Petaluma. Pleased to have join us in conversation, the lead pastor of Adobe, Sean O'Kelly. And Pastor O'Kelly, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be with you.
I mentioned about the fact that you've spent the bulk of your life and ministry career working in Northern California, and I understand that you came first to Adobe just as sort of the worst part of COVID was subsiding. And I don't know if we can ever say that it's over with, but that said, that was an interesting transitional period for a lot of churches. This whole notion of, well, we're not going to go to church, we're going to watch church on the internet. And then some people that once things started to open back up decided time to get back in, never forsake the gathering of ourselves together in fellowship. And others kind of said, well, I like watching the Sunday service here in my living room in pajamas. How is that for you in terms of coming in as the pastor of a church as COVID was dwindling? Was that, did it have some challenges?
Yeah, it definitely had some challenges. My wife and I grew up here in Sonoma County. So we'd planted a church about 10 years before we came back. And so we were dealing with that at the church we'd planted and, you know, lockdowns and meet or not meet. Be online, do all that stuff. And so we'd been going through it, and then we came at what we thought was the end, and the church here, all the churches in Petaluma had been outdoors or online only. So we came at the tail end of that, and so really the first challenge was navigating moving the church back indoors, and it was, you know, winter time and rainstorms and just freezing while inside and not being able to see people's faces because people were still masked for the first 6 months of coming to the church. Just the disconnection that people were experiencing, we really felt that coming back to the community and coming to the church at Adobe.
You know, it reminds me of what the challenges must have been like for some aspects of the first century church. In that case, of course, we weren't being persecuted necessarily by an infectious disease, but rather by anger and hatred and misunderstanding and all that attended to the early days of the first century church, and certainly Rome persecution, things of that sort. And I wonder, to what degree do you feel as if some of what the church went through during that period of time, that not yours individually, but in the grander scheme of things, in the body of Christ, that might be important lessons that we can continue to take with us moving forward?
Yeah, I think we learned a lot of things. I think studies have shown recently now like 30% of people in the U.S. left the church during that time and didn't really come back. And so that's pretty, for me as a pastor, was eye-opening and awakening of, and had we been doing a great job making disciples, that something like this could fracture us so strongly. And so we really have pivoted because of that, to say, like, we really need to connect people to each other. We really need to connect them, not just to the local church, but to their faith and to Jesus, so that when trials come, whether it's easy to show up to church and worship freely, or one day a tyrannical, you know, force comes in and says, you can't do this anymore, that people are still strong enough in their faith to cling to that. And so we really felt that during it of, you know, like, okay, this is what a little bit of persecution might have felt like. How can we as the church function in, you know, we had this great freedom. There's not real persecution here, you know, like there is in places around the world. And so this was just a little taste, and I think a good warning or awakening moment to understand, like, we really need to dial stuff in and make sure we're building on a firm foundation.
Perhaps it also, to a degree, I mean, it certainly had the tendency to upset everything from healthcare to global economic markets, the economy, on and on the list goes. But maybe one of the so-called silver linings, as you're hinting at, that came out of this was the way in which it sort of upset the manner in which we view church. And, you know, I think for the longest time, certainly in Western cultures like ours, it's easy to do church, show up, go on Sunday. We do it because that's what we've always done. We were raised to do it. It was less about our identity, perhaps, to some degree, and more about what we did. And so if suddenly a big interrupter like a COVID comes in and interrupts what we do, it might be difficult to get back to it. However, if the core viewpoint or understanding is from that pure discipleship position that you spoke of a moment ago, it's not something necessarily that what we do, but who we are at the core, that's a lot more difficult to abandon. And so with that idea in mind, perhaps that notion of coming back to some of the basics and understanding that just because somebody shows up and occupies a seat in the pew every Sunday doesn't mean that they walk away and exercising a vibrant, deep, profound, tactile sort of relationship with very God himself Monday through Saturday, does it?
Yeah, well, and I think it was easy before COVID to kind of be a consumer Christian or a cultural Christian and to show up, and you could go when you go and it feels nice when you go and you get something out of it. But it's still, you do it out of convenience. And when you go, you're there maybe mostly to receive for yourself. And I think probably a good portion of those who maybe fell away from the church that didn't come back were maybe in that crowd. But what we found during COVID, like, we had to pivot to doing house churches. So we weren't meeting in the building, but we found out, you know, people were still meeting in secret friend groups, these little mini pods of get-togethers. And so we said, well, let's just do that. You know, the church meets in homes and has been in house churches throughout the history of the church. So we did that and said, hey, we're not getting together maybe for what you're used to for church on Sundays, but we mobilize people to be in homes. And we saw, like, the greatest discipleship growth in people's lives who are engaged in those that I've ever seen, because they were really doing life together, being the church together, and having to, like, live out their faith without the, I just get to show up and kind of consume worship and consume preaching. And it was, honestly, it was a great period of time to kind of relook at what does church mean, what does being part of it mean, and how do we do it.
Not to pivot to eschatology, because I know that'll be a road that we can head down and take a ride for hours. But I have to wonder, from your perspective, is there an aspect in which you felt, kind of looking back on the whole COVID experience, and not just your transition of coming to the church as a senior pastor of Adobe Christian in Petaluma on the heels of COVID, but just sort of your bird's eye view of everything? Were there dynamics which seemed to suggest maybe God was also preparing us? Because I think about the urgency of the end times, and we certainly, every day you read the newspaper, go online, watch the news, and see what's going on in the world, and I think there is that growing sense amongst believers of urgency. And whether he's coming tomorrow or next week, you know, no one knows, but that sense of perhaps this being a bit of a preparatory exercise and understanding the importance. And I ask that question because one of the fascinating dynamics beyond sort of this separating of the wheat and the chaff that went on, I also found a lot of people that were walking in a intimate relationship with Christ that pivoted to being more forward and more open about their faith and had a greater sense, especially as all of us were talking. I mean, at 20-year-olds talking about, gee, what if I get COVID and die? I mean, to be pondering our mortality at that age is a rarity. And so suddenly there were those that said, gee, this is kind of a gift to the church. Certainly in my recollection, there's no time in my life where there was more opportunity and more focus on people that were afraid of death and asking questions about death and, pardon me, even bringing up issues related to the here and after, that really almost presented a unique, not only open door for the church, but maybe even a bit of a glimpse of what we might face in the future. Do you think any of that is a possibility?
Yeah, I think whether you're in the church or out of the church, Christian or not Christian, everyone has their own end time idea, right? Whether you think it's some natural thing and the earth is going to explode or melt, or you know, the Lord's coming back, whatever you're at on that, everyone has that fear of the end. And I do think COVID brought that up in people. And it did generate conversations, and part of what we saw in the houses was people who would never come to a church on a Sunday morning would go to their friend's house church. We called them house churches. It wasn't, a bait and switch. We didn't trick them into it. But they would show up to those gatherings, and they would have spiritual conversations, and they would ask hard questions, and they would pray together. And they were doing church without going to the building of the church, because of that season and some of that fear and what they were feeling. And they were open to having these spiritual conversations when our people were kind of trained and ready and kind of off of that. I don't know when the end times are coming. What I do know is there could be a day where we don't have the freedom to worship the way we've been able to. And we've had so many generations where we've had that freedom, it becomes easy to take it for granted how great it has really been. And I do think if it was preparation, we saw, and churches were able to pivot really quickly. And those that did, I think, did really well. And those that couldn't, a lot of churches don't exist anymore that did exist 2, 3, 4 years ago. And so I think my hope, at least, is that if it was the Lord kind of pruning back so that we have a stronger church today than we had before, and the body of believers are stronger today than they were before, we definitely saw that we, the church, could handle whatever is going to come. The church is strong. Jesus is going to make the church keep going, and no matter what happens, kind of outside forces can't stop that. And I
the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Yes, indeed. And you know, it's
interesting.
Absolutely. You know, and the interesting thing, as you allude to, while certainly, you know, we can't ignore the tragic aspect of this, from the incredible loss of life to the major disruption that it had in our own country and so many others, that part of the benefit, the silver lining, so to speak, was to not only understand our ability of being resilient, but I also like that notion of sort of returning to our early roots of what the house church looked like, because in the early days, the first century church, that's all there was the house church. And that ability to not hide, show up to service, slip into the back pew, enjoy the service, and then, you know, before pastor catches you shaking hands out front, be out the front door and back to your quote-unquote day-to-day life, that instead meeting one-on-one in small groups and having that intimacy and that ability to speak truth to each other and to exhort one another, that scriptural mandate to bear one another's burdens, that kind of all played out in so many ways during COVID, perhaps is the thing that at the end of the day makes us stronger and more resilient.
Yeah, well, and even, right, churches opened back up and people came back, but there was still some kind of fracture took place in people relationally. And I think it took a little bit of time for people to learn how to reengage and reconnect, and there was a real social break. And so for us, it is that piece of trying to remember, like, okay, the relationship we have with other believers is also irreplaceable. The isolation that took place really caused people a lot of harm, and so God didn't create us for that. I think it's in Psalms it says God places the lonely in families, and so the isolationism that took place was a real eye opener of, man, even if you're coming to church when the church is back open and it's a Sunday morning, you could still be all alone. You might as well just be at home if you're not engaging and connecting with people and sharing life with others and lifting others up and having others strengthen you. And so, yeah, I think we learned a lot during that season that we can also take into what should the church be doing moving forward, because people are desperately hungry for, like, authentic connection with other people, and we need it. We're just created to be in community with others.
And, you know, if you think about it from a scriptural viewpoint, the relational component, where perhaps there have been large swaths of time in which we saw that as just sort of a side benefit. Oh, and isn't it nice, too, that we have friends at church? Perhaps forgetting the fact that at the core, this entire thing, meaning Christianity, pivots on relationship. That God so wanted relationship with his creation that he was willing to sacrifice his son in order by which we might be reconciled, restored, and then walk in fellowship with the very creator of the universe. Why? Because God wants a relationship with us. And wow, it may be in just the busyness of life, it's easy to forget such things, as I suggested earlier, because we tend to be all about what we do as opposed to who we are. But if the core, you understand that the real core message here, when you strip everything aside, is about relationship, whether we talk about restoring relationships on the vertical or most importantly, I mean, on the horizontal or most importantly, on the vertical plane with God, that's really what it comes down to, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you couldn't go to your gym. You couldn't go to whatever club you're part of. You lost all of it. And I think what we saw was the relational piece that people were starving for. We were able to meet that continuing by having people continue to get together in homes, and it just really showed that desire for us as people to need to connect with one another, and so we've tried to foster that, you know, moving forward as well, help people in that area.
I noticed in taking a quick look at your CV that you graduated from the School of Urban Missions, which is exciting. And although you're working in a largely rural area up in Petaluma, it's kind of a different world from downtown San Jose or San Francisco in a sense, isn't it?
A little bit. I wouldn't call it rural, though. It used to be way more rural. We grew up in Sonoma County. And now I think a lot of tech people have moved further north.
Your secret got out about how nice it is, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's no better place in the world to be than I think the North Bay and Petaluma, and so it still feels rural, but also you have all the amenities of tech and all the stuff that goes along with that too. So I mean, it's just a great place to be.
What degree of diversity do you find up in that part of the world? And that's going to sound like, you know, somebody speaking from the deep Bay Area, but I'm curious, as you think about parts of Sonoma County and up into Petaluma and so forth, I know that there's a fairly large Hispanic population, but give us a sense in terms of your background and training that really is designed to deal with the challenges and opportunities of diverse people groups that are coming to church, perhaps, or that you're touching a life that maybe has never heard of Jesus, or they've only known about Jesus kind of on the periphery, didn't grow up in America, didn't grow up with any familiarity of what Christianity is all about. Are there any challenges of that sort that you're facing in relationship to the ministry at Adobe Christian?
Yeah, so, you know, I graduated from School of Urban Missions. My master's is actually in organizational leadership. And so I came, and so I'm more organizationally focused, but we came back to the area. And, you know, growing up here, I didn't grow up in the church. I wasn't a Christian. And so coming back, I'm used to the lack of diversity in spirituality, meaning there's a lot of people here who don't know Jesus, who didn't grow up in church, just like I didn't. So it's a significant issue. I think, like, my numbers personally, I could estimate about 90-ish% unchurched, just in Petaluma and throughout Sonoma County. Probably close to the same. I mean, very unchurched. And what we've seen kind of a influx post COVID, or some younger families coming to church who'd been out of the church for a long time, maybe had never been in church, have maybe their first or second babies, and they're coming to church for the first time. Just felt like something was missing, and drove by the church and popped in, and so we've seen this group of younger people with zero church background. We have kids coming to the church who don't know any Bible stories. You know, it used to be, even if you weren't a real strong Christian, you knew David and Goliath, you knew Daniel and the lion's den. And so these people coming now are just like I was. The first time I learned the story of Daniel in the lion's den, I was 18 years old, and I was teaching it to a preschool class right after I had gotten saved. And so So we're encountering a lot of people who have zero faith background, or maybe they had a bad church experience as a kid growing up, and they've been out of church for a while, or they're wounded. And so we've just tried to be a place where you don't have to have a church background. You don't need experience to come. We just want you to come and have another opportunity to give God a chance. And that's a lot of this area. And then you also have a significant crowd that are a little bit hostile towards the church and towards people of faith. And, you know, even in some of the local schools, it's a challenge to be a young person living for Christ. You could be the only one on a school campus right now. And so teaching people how to live in that environment, how to follow Jesus, how to be faithful to him in your workplace where it might be challenging, where you might be the only person who's praying before a meal at a lunch table. I mean, that's, I think, the real challenge of this area is the post-Christian culture that's here of, you know, maybe 50 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago, there was a boom and the church was strong. And now it's a complete afterthought to the average person who's here. And I think it's really put the challenge then back on the church for people who go to churches and people who are of faith to live out their faith outside the church in every arena that they're in, work, play, you know, all of that stuff, to have to live that out and to engage a lost culture that's not looking for Jesus as the answer to their questions.
Tell us a bit about ministry there at Adobe Christian Church. As we mentioned, you've been senior pastor there since 2021. Give us a bit of a snapshot. Folks that are maybe new to the region that are looking for a church home, or maybe the family is growing and they're looking to change things up a little bit. Tell us what they might find at Adobe Christian.
Yeah, we have the most beautiful 10 acres right off Adobe Road in Petaluma, set against the hills right now with the rain. It's been green. It's like the most beautiful time of year. So it's a great setting. We have an amazing space. Since kind of coming, we've really emphasized the next generation. I think part of what we talked about earlier is just making a place for where families can go to church. And so our staff regularly, we say, how can we be the kind of church that people with young kids can come and enjoy going to church? And so we've really focused on our kids programming. We've had just explosive growth in the nursery and preschool classrooms. And so we have fantastic leaders in those areas. We got kids in church on Sundays. I'll preach right through babies crying. I love having babies in the room during church. It means the church is growing and there's life and it's vibrant. And we also have an incredible preschool. And so that early childhood education piece where we're training up kids age 2, 3, and 4 to hear about who Jesus is from the youngest age. And teachers are coming to the church on Sundays. And so we have this great cross-pollination going on between our school and the church and growth in young families. And so we really put an emphasis on children's ministry and youth ministry. Our teenagers, that group is growing as well. And we're just kind of seeing young people who maybe had never had an experience in church before or knowing who Jesus was, coming to faith. We've been baptizing young families. It's in water. And so that's been really exciting to see, you know, a mom and a dad come and want to get baptized in water together as they've begun this new faith journey and really changing the future for these kids who are going to get to grow up in a Christian household and they're going to get to know Jesus from day one. And that's really our heart's mission for kids is we think sometimes the best testimony is the testimony of someone who never had to live out in the world and were spared from some of the hardships and challenges that someone like me who didn't grow up in the church had. It's just incredible to get to know Jesus from an early age. And so we're trying to make that a possibility for families. And so we're really focusing on that. And then this relational piece where we've recently launched house churches. And so so we're slowly, organically starting to have people meet throughout the week in homes. And we really focus during that time on connection relationally. There's always food present so people can hang out and have fun. And then we have discussion around the Bible We have a Bible reading plan for our church, and we just have people chat about what they read that week, pray together, and have some food. And so it's real casual church gatherings in homes for people to grow spiritually together, connect relationally, and have opportunity to continue worship outside of the building on a Sunday morning.
Being the church, I love it. And to clarify, your Sunday service is at 10 a.m., and you don't split them out? Everybody hangs out together?
Yeah, right now everyone's together, 10 o'clock. We got enough space. It's beautiful. The campus, we have all these classrooms because of the school, and so on Sunday. So it's just great right now. And, you know, it's trying to keep people in one service as long as we can together before we go to multiple times. But right now, yeah, everybody gets to be together. And I
love that, because that whole thing of, well, now we're going to send the kids here and the young adults over there, you know, being together and modeling that on a Sunday morning, I think is really beneficial. And so I'm thrilled to hear that you're doing that. And of course, when you talk about having 10 acres, I know that there are pastors that are eavesdropping on our conversation that when they heard that kind of slapped their forehead and said, wow, wish we had 1/10 of that that we could expand into. So sounds like God has really blessed the church, and you guys are heading into a dynamic, exciting new season here. Again, Adobe Christian Church is located at 2875 Adobe Road in Petaluma. You can get information on the web by simply going to Adobe CC, think Christian Church, adobecc.org. That's adobecc.org. Sunday service times are at 10 a.m. And then I imagine you guys are doing some things throughout the week, house church, things of that sort.
Yeah, right now house churches are kind of the main thing we're rolling out. And so we're pretty heavy emphasize on the Sunday morning, and then in homes during the week. You know, all the other kind of programs that maybe other churches do, we're excited for those churches that do those things. For us, it really is about be with your family, be with people in your community, live your life for Christ outside the church during the week. And so come Sunday, come be part of something in a home during the week. But we really want people to continue, just live your life for Jesus, doing what you're doing. And we think that's what's best for us right now.
The relational approach to Christianity. I love it. Again, Adobe Christian Church, 2875 Adobe Road in Petaluma. Information available on the web at adobecc.org. Our thanks to lead pastor Sean O'Kelly for being with us today. Pastor O'Kelly, thanks so much for the time. It's been a delight getting a chance to visit with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
We're starting off a brand new series, a brand new year, and if you were here last week, we had waffles. Yeah, like the waffles last week. Is that good? Do you want to, some of you, maybe we won't ever do it again. That wasn't a lot of excitement. We had waffles with toppings. It was great. I really enjoyed last Sunday. There was good energy in the room, people sitting around tables, sharing life together. And if you're here last week, I told you that this would be what we're calling a year of disciple making. And on the lobby wall outside the doors there are our core values. And the D in Adobe stands for disciple makers. And churches are not called to make disciples. So my job is to equip you for the work of the ministry. Your job is to be a disciple maker. And so my job as an individual Christ follower is to make disciples. But as the pastor of the church, it's not to have a church that makes disciples. It's all of our jobs to make disciples. And so if you have a Bible, we're going to be in John chapter 15, and we'll jump around a little bit. It'll be on the screen for you. Here's what it says in John chapter 15, verse 5, 6, 16, and 17. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you're like a branch that is thrown away and withers, and such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. Jesus continues on and says, you didn't choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. Now, I want you to picture yourself as a branch on a grapevine. get that mental image. It should be pretty easy to visualize that here in wine country. And so picture just a single grapevine, right? And off of that one true vine are many shoots or many branches. And if you sever the branch from the vine and you toss it into the green waste recycle bin, because we're eco-conscious and that's what we would do, right? You could imagine, right? Maybe some other counties, they throw it into the burn pile and it gets burned. But apart from Jesus, you will die. And Jesus says that you, as a branch, are grafted onto the true vine, that's him, and that if you remain in him, connected to the one true vine, that you will grow and you will produce fruit. There's no catch to that. It's if you are connected to Jesus, you will grow and you will produce fruit. Now, the reverse of that might or should scare you if you're not growing. It might mean you're not connected to the one true vine. But just being attached to the vine causes growth. Further, Jesus said he chose you. He appointed you. He hand-selected you. That's how cool you are to go and produce fruit. Your spiritual life has no excuse for being barren. Now, disciple making, making other disciples. Before I read to you the most famous Bible verse on making disciples, two questions that I've asked you before. I'm going to re-ask one of them. I'm going to change one of them up for you. And this is just what I want you to think about this morning. So the first one is, how do you make a disciple? I've asked you that before. Not like a general collective royal we, you, but you individually, how do you make a disciple? And then number two, this question is a little different than what I've asked before. Who discipled you? Who is discipling you? So just have those in kind of the back of your mind. Matthew chapter 28, here's the famous verses. Jesus came and told his disciples, I've been given all authority in heaven and on earth. So go, make disciples of all the nations, baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. And be sure of this, I'm with you even to the end of the age. Jesus tells us in these verses, here's who I am. I've got all the authority in heaven and earth. Here's what I want you to do. Go and make disciples and baptize them. And then he says, here's how you do it. Teach these new disciples everything. It's a kind of a big task. And so a personal pet peeve of mine is that for a lot of our lifetimes, we've been trained that it's the church's job to make me a better disciple. And if they don't do a good job, it means they didn't feed me well enough. And maybe you've even said that. You've definitely heard someone say it before. Like, I just wasn't being fed at that church. And here's what I would say to you. I can guarantee you every single church on the face of the planet, if they're a church and they exist, they're putting some form of food out every week when their people come gather. Now, the meals might not be as good at some places, just like your house and my house. Sometimes the meals are better than others. But every church exists to feed people. There's something of spiritual value in every Bible-preaching church that exists. And so we've been trained that it's the church's job. Well, I go to the church, they spoon feed me my food, and I grow and I get nourished. And when the world was mostly Christian-ish, it did an okay job when that was our model. Do you remember those days when the world was mostly Christian-ish? A family's life during those days centered around the church. What the church events were, the church calendar, what the church taught. Kids grew up regularly going to church, participating in Sunday school, knowing the Bible, have praying parents, right? This was the common experience for many people in churches. Prayer was in schools. The Bible was used to instruct on morals and behavior. And newsflash, those days don't exist here anymore. And if that's shocking to you, I'm sorry for sharing news that should be pretty obvious to those of us who are looking around. And so I want you to understand that because the times have changed, there's a requirement from us to probably change to do what Jesus calls us to do effectively. And so now if you attend church a few Sundays a month or the national average once every 6 weeks, that's bad. So if you're here twice a month, awesome job. You're killing it on the average attendance. If you're here every Sunday, man, you are every pastor's favorite human being. We just like to see people who like coming to church. And here's the challenge, right? But if you go every few Sundays or whatever, and you think that that's enough to be discipled well, but you live a mostly non-Jesus life daily at home and at work and in your normal life, you might not realize that you're probably a pretty poor disciple. Quiet. I thought it might be quiet at this part. No one likes being potentially called a poor disciple. And listen, we're talking about the people not here today because you're here in church today, right? But if you live a life apart from Jesus, apart from the vine, and once in a while you pop in, right, you might be a pretty poor disciple unless you're very intentional about centering your whole life around Jesus, right? If your whole life is centered around Jesus, church is not actually that needed for you. It's part of what you're doing, but it's not the whole thing. And so do you know what a disciple is? It's becoming a copy of the original. A disciple of Jesus is someone becoming a miniature version or a copycat of Jesus. And you can never be Jesus. And even if you could try your best, which is what we do, we'll never measure up. We'll never be Jesus. But your goal is to become as much like him as possible. And that makes you a disciple or a follower of the teachings of Jesus. So let me ask you this, don't shout out the answer, but can someone look at your life, their interactions with you, maybe not even with you, but just observing your interactions with others, could they look at your life, never speak to you, and identify that you're a copy of Jesus? In every area you go, right? That's at the grocery store, in traffic. I'm not always a Christian in traffic. At work, at school, at church. Sometimes we're not good Christians even at church. Like, can people observe you and know that you're a follower of Jesus? Verse 19, he said, therefore, go make disciples of all the nations, baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Before we can make a disciple, right? So the Bible says, go and make disciples. Before we can make a disciple, we have to understand and agree on the premise that Jesus sent you, to go and make disciples. And so my goal this morning, I hope that you hear what I'm saying, you hear what Jesus has said, and you say, okay, I affirm that the Bible tells me that Jesus says it's my job to make disciples. I'm not going to ask for your agreement right now, but I hope we're there. I hope you realize it's your job to make disciples. Now, at the risk of offending you, maybe again, let me preface this next part by reminding you, I want you to listen to everything that I have to say. Listen to all the little parts that are going to make up this next thing before you get offended and just shut down and don't hear what I'm saying. All right? Are you primed enough to know that the next part's not going to be your favorite part? Amen. Thank you. The first group of people that we are called to disciple are our own children, if we have them. And we have several generations now that have done a very terrible job. Now, you might feel offended. Hold on. Let me finish this part, all right? Remember, the model that you were taught and that you grew up in, if you've been in church the last 10 to 30 years, is mostly that we had children grow up in church. We would bring our children to church. The church told us the way to disciple our kids was bring your kids to church and then let the church programs disciple the kids and they'll become little copies of Jesus. And at least when I was like just a, I was the best youth pastor in the history of youth pastors. And I don't miss youth ministry at all, by the way. Thank God for Kim and Anthony and for teenagers. I was also a terrible kids pastor back in the day as well. I hated being a kids pastor. But back in those days, when I was a kids and a youth pastor, here was the stat that that we were operating under. 80 to 87% of all teenagers that grew up in the church would leave the church. And most young Christian adults, when they get out of high school, walk away from Jesus, leave the church. Some come back eventually. But the stats now, right, in the previous generations, they'd usually come back once they got married and had kids. And in the last decade or two, we're seeing they are not actually returning back to the church. So you didn't do a terrible job if you raised your kids in church and they're now not following Jesus. So you can take off the offense. You're like, okay, he's not telling me I'm a bad parent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we were in a system that did a really poor job. The system gave us about a 13% success rate. If you're a hitter in baseball, you don't get to play baseball anymore if you're batting 130. And so we're in this system that was designed to give very low probability of success. And there's fewer churches, there's fewer Christians. The American church overall is in massive decline, and something wasn't right. Something must have been broken, because your Bible says that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church because Jesus is the one building it. And so if that's the case, why is there decline? Are you able to hear me? Are you with me still a little bit? And right, it's not to offend you. I want to offend our senses and our preconceived beliefs about the church, because I'm not blaming you. I'm not even blaming necessarily the church, but this is what the church taught you. Connect your kids to the church and they're going to thrive. And it turns out that's not the case. If you connect them just to the church, they're really going to struggle one day when someone says, why do you believe what you believe? Well, it's just what my parents taught me. Well, as you know, probably about your own parents, they don't know everything. Kids in the front row, your parents know everything. The rest of you, you know, your parents don't know everything. Jesus said, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you. We didn't connect our kids to Jesus. We connected them to a kids pastor who they loved, and they loved coming to church and they had a good time. Or a youth pastor, and they loved the youth pastor. The youth pastor loved them, saw them through hardships through high school, and that was a good season of life and following Jesus. Or maybe we connected to a ministry or to a church, and their spiritual discipleship was based off of an imperfect organization led by imperfect people. To make a disciple, we have to connect people to the one true vine and allow him to be their source of spiritual life. They can't even have their source be their parents who love Jesus. It turns out that's not enough either. They have to be grafted themselves onto Jesus, onto the true vine, and allow him to be their source of spiritual life. No church can replace the role of Jesus to make healthy spiritual people. So back to the question at the beginning of the message, how do you make a disciple? I was on a prayer retreat. I go on this prayer retreat every year. And one year I went up to Tahoe, and I just felt this burden of discipleship. And so I made a list during some of my prayer time of just what does a good disciple have? And I think I came up with about 36 things. And a few years later, I kind of whittled that down to a message I'd preached called The 12 Disciples of Discipleship. And I look at that list now, and I'm like, man, that's inadequate. And this is a really hard question to wrestle with and to ask and to understand. Like, how do you make a disciple? Because there's an infinite number of ways to make a disciple. And so how did Jesus make a disciple? In our core values series, I taught you that he did three things. First, people brought other people to Jesus. Next, Jesus taught his disciples his teachings. And then he spent a bunch of time with them. I'm like, that's a pretty good model. But if you remember at the beginning, the Bible said to teach his disciples everything. Anyone here know everything about the Bible? I don't. That's a real big challenge if you say, I want you to teach them everything. Well, how do you teach someone everything? You teach them to go to the manual, the resource manual that has the answers to everything. And so it's the only way I know how is I guess we got to use the Bible to make disciples. And to do this Jesus model, maybe you can follow this model. Bring people to Jesus or bring Jesus to people, right? So wherever you go, you talk about Jesus, you live for Jesus, you be Jesus. Then you teach them his teachings, and then you spend time together. You know the thing that people hate most about discipleship is the human cost. It'd be awesome if you just, hey, you know what? Here's a Bible reading plan. We're going to read it. Just read this and you'll be fine. If that's all it was, that's actually pretty easy. You got to talk about the Bible with people. You have to do the Bible with people. You have to wrestle with it with people. You have to go through life with people. And the people part is people are going to hurt you. They're going to turn on you. They're going to let you down. They're also going to give you the greatest successes and the most joy. And man, Jesus did that part earlier we read, like you have to love each other also. You can't love people if you isolate yourself from people. And so I think this Jesus model is the only model that I know to follow. Bring people to Jesus, teach them his teachings, and spend time together. I'm the vine and you're the branches, he said. Remain in me and I in you. The word in the Bible for remain, it means to continue or to live. If you continue in Jesus, if you live in Jesus and Jesus lives in you, you can't depart from him. You just can't. If he is your lifeline, there's nowhere else to go. There's nothing that could happen in my life that would cause me to walk away from Jesus. Like it is the source of my life. If we connect someone to the church only, they can lose their spiritual life. When something at the church goes wrong or hurts you or goes a way that you don't agree with, then you can walk away from Jesus. And we've seen that time and time again. We've seen that in young people who become adults and they walk away from Jesus. Remaining in Jesus is like this valve. I have this valve. It has an on and off. It's currently in the open position. This valve can be adjusted though, right? To allow the flow of water to go through it at the pace that you want it. And so when it's open, water just flows right through it. Life can flow right through it. You can close the valve. There you go. The valve is closed. And all flow through the valve is now blocked. Remaining in Jesus is when you open the valve. Now, most of us are probably living life closed just a little bit on. Now, some flow can come through. Some life can come through. This is a really tough way to work when God's trying to pump life source through you. And well, the valve's only kind of open because I don't like everything that you might want from me, Jesus. We have to live life where we say, I'm going to fully live open to what the Lord has for me. Because remaining in Jesus is when you work to allow the valve to remain open so that life flows from the one true vine into the branch, and you are the branch. Branches die on the vine, though. Did you know that? Just being connected to the vine doesn't always work, and because I garden now, you know, when you get old, you're just like, let me get some hobbies that I thought old people had when I was a young person. And now I'm like, it's actually peaceful. No wonder people just want to go be with plants. The funny thing, I was thinking about this illustration. I was like, oh man, and plants will never hurt you. like people would, but plants kill people all the time, and there's all kinds of rashes you can get and allergies, and plants are just as bad as people. So I have nothing for you to make that analogy. But because I garden, I did some research on vines and why does a branch die on the vine? There's a lot of reasons. It can be disease, rot, damage to the roots or the vine, stress, weather, too much water, not enough water, too much sun, not enough sun. It's a miracle that any branch ever survives. It's imagining, like, every house plant that we have, it's a miracle that it survives. And maybe you're the same way, but it's also a miracle that any of us survive spiritually. Think about all the disease in this world, all the rot, all the damage that takes place, all the storms that happen. It's a miracle that any of us are able to follow Jesus, come to church on any given Sunday and be like, Lord, man, the world's a terrible place, but you're good. It's a miracle. Your faith is a miracle. Jesus chose you to get to experience him. And so the external forces of this world, they want to shut off the flow through the valve of life from the vine to you, the branch. And without the flow of life from Jesus into you and I, we die and wither on the vine spiritually. So what keeps the valve open? Because for you to be a good disciple, the valve has to be open so that life flows from Jesus into you. I wrote down a couple of things. I think when we read the Bible, it opens up the valve. Staying in God's word creates this constant flow of life into our soul. If you don't read the Bible, I don't know how else the flow of God comes into your life. We spend time daily in prayer, speaking to and hearing from God. When you set time aside and when you pray just all throughout the day, you live kind of a lifestyle of prayer, listening to and talking to God. It keeps the valve open so that God can flow into your life. When we go to church as part of our spiritual life, as part of our spiritual life, part of our spiritual life. We worship corporately with each other. We build community with each other. We hear the word preached together. That's part of opening the valve of how God flows in our lives. We make daily decisions to obey the commands. Jesus said, teach them everything. Now, once we know him, now we obey everything. Every time you obey something that Jesus taught, it opens the flow in your life. Every time that you choose sin, it starts to close that valve just a little bit more. And I don't know where the line is, but if you walk away from God and you close that valve enough times, eventually it severs the entire flow from your life. Every sin temptation that you resist, it jacks that thing to wide open and God just flows in your life. We remain in Jesus. We open up the flow by being led by the voice and the work of the Holy Spirit each and every single day. God is speaking to you every day. Every day? It's exhausting. Sometimes you just want a break from the Lord. Like, Lord, man, this is good. It's really hard to live for you. It's really hard to read these things in the Bible and put it into practice and to be like you. It's tough. It is tough. And so I want you to think about the valve's open. Now it's closed. Where are you in the open and closed of the valve? Where's your spiritual life right now at the beginning of this new year? Is it barely letting in a trickle of spiritual life? Is it full blasts coming through? Is it somewhere in between? Like, take a moment and think about that. The failure of the church with recent generations is that we connected them to the wrong source. You said, bring your friend to church, and then your pastor will give an altar call, they'll get saved, and then they'll put your friend into a four-week discipleship program. They'll read a book about the Bible, but not the Bible. The church isn't your source, it's your supplement. We're a vitamin. Jesus is your source. A supplement can't sustain you. It adds something to you when you're already being sustained. We treated church like the main course of our meals, except we only ate once a week, and once a week was good, but maybe we only ate once a month even, and once every 6 weeks. And then we came into church starving to death spiritually. Of course you weren't being fed. You can't eat the same way when you're starving. Do you know what happens to someone who's literally physically starving to death? And then someone gives them a buffet of choice food to binge on. You get cramps, causes pain. You suffer from weakness. You can have seizures. You can die if you're starving and you gorge yourself on food. Spiritually, the same thing takes place. If you read the Bible or you only pray every now and then, a couple times a year, then you come to church, Christmas and Easter maybe, and you're starving spiritually. And then a meal you can't handle is put before you. You walk away. It kills you spiritually. You say, oh, I can't handle that. They're preaching this stuff in the Bible, and man, that's too hard for me. No wonder we made disciples who couldn't stick with Jesus the last few decades. We connected people to the wrong source. They starved. Then we fed them spiritual food they couldn't handle. Of course, people have walked away from Jesus and the church. Coming made them sick. That's not what we want. That's not what we want for you. We want to take you from wherever you're at today, feed you an appropriate meal to grow you and strengthen you, to get you to where Jesus wants you to be. And so it's my argument as we're kicking off this year that it's our job as followers of Jesus to make disciples. It's your job to make disciples and to do that in life with people. And the people you're making disciples with are people you know. You have a relationship with them. And so as you have a relationship, you know what your friends need. You know what your family needs. I can't tailor every Sunday to one specific person. We would miss everybody. And so we preach the gospel. We preach what the Lord has for us as a body moving in the same direction together. But then individually, we make disciples. We bring people to Jesus. And sometimes that might mean bringing them to church. Bringing them to church is a great thing. This is a great church for people who don't know Jesus to come to and have the opportunity to meet people who know him and to encounter his spirit. But that's secondary. Bring them to Jesus before you bring them to church. Why don't you lead them to Jesus? My life goal is that the most emails I receive as a pastor of this church are you telling me, hey, I led this friend to the Lord this week. That's what I want. I want to hear your testimonies of the things God's doing in your life when you're not here. So that when you bring them on that Sunday, like, oh man, come to church with me. We're going to worship together. You get to see a group of believers worshiping the God that you just gave your life to. Like, that's really exciting for me. Teach people his teachings. Discuss the Bible with people. Study the Bible with people. A Bible study is not reading a book that an author wrote about the Bible. Just read the Bible. I don't get it. Pick up the Bible, read it. That's a Bible study. Do it with some people. Now you have a little group of people studying the Bible. Then teach that to others, right? And when you have questions, shoot me an email. Give me a call. Come on Sunday. We'll get you resourced of how to study the Bible without starting a cult. Sometimes you read stuff and then you're like, well, I'll just do that, but that seems wrong. We'll help you rightly divide the Bible. Spend time with the small select group that you can grow with, challenge one another, love, connect with, live life with. I would argue that that's what making a disciple really is about. It's our job to help you. It's the job of Adobe, the team here, to equip you, to train you, to give you opportunity and to supplement the work of disciple making that you're doing. My goal by the end of this year, I told you we want to make you a better disciple, but my real goal by the end of the year is that you're in someone else's life helping them grow closer to Jesus by the end of this year.
That is the lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church of Petaluma, Pastor Sean O'Kelly.
This has been the Church of the Week, showcasing churches and pulpit ministries from across the greater San Francisco Bay Area. To nominate your congregation for Church of the Week, please email us the name and address of your pastor and church,
along with a link to your church's website to Church of the Week at salemsf.com. Again, that's the name and address of your pastor and church, along with a link to the website and email to churchoftheweek@salemsf.com. While all submissions will be considered, not every submission is guaranteed airtime. Thank you for joining us today, and be sure to tune in again next week at this time for the Church of the Week.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.